Marcia, Bro Con Show with Anna DeBlanc to suffer another day. Broadcast insolence.
Wasting no time, the new mayor has just signed an executive order on aldermanic privilege.
Uh-oh.
Couple of minutes ago, at the fifth floor of City Hall, that has happened.
Who would do that? What kind of
what's happening here?
Hey!
I like how the aldermen seem to want baby steps toward reform.
Yeah,
as
baby
if
steps.
That's what we need.
Yeah, we don't. I mean, listen, I got a lot of money coming in this month. I got
slow it down a little.
I got alimony to pay. What the? Come on.
Yeah, I guess she's leaving the power over zoning intact, but limiting influence on a slew of other things like permits and administrative functions and all kinds of things like that.
Oh, boy. Well, she said she was going to do it.
She did.
Now it's been done.
She didn't waste a single moment. She didn't even seem to go out to lunch in Greektown or anything. She just sort of went over to Manny's Deli, as they like to do, right?
Yeah.
She went right to the fifth floor and started signing stuff.
These guys going right to the bar right now. I'll tell you, that is what that's going to be like. Oh, man. All right. Well, that's fun.
Yeah.
That's when John Cass is going to join us coming up a little bit later on this hour. Talk about all of this, his thoughts. I also want to, there's so many things we have to get to today. I don't even know where to begin. Mm-hmm. I know Kevin cannot wait to have a Game of Thrones conversation because, you know, he's such a big fan. Kevin, I want to say, though, last night, Richard and Lauren co-hosted a show. I happen to have just been there pressing the buttons.
Oh.
But they...
Did you press the right buttons?
Did I? I don't think I did. Not 100%.
I'm getting a thumbs up.
The great Brian Altimer, who is our sonic genius, delivered all of the audio that we possibly could need. And he did it in 27 minutes. He took an hour and 20-minute show and distilled it down in 27 minutes to all of these cuts. And it was a really fun thing to do. But Kevin afterwards, so this ran from 10 to 11 last night on this very radio station. And so afterwards, Kevin texted us and he was like, hey, I didn't understand a word of what you people were talking about because we did it with spoiler alerts and the whole thing. But I will say this, that it was entertaining. And to hear Lauren and Richard make this sort of a grand philosophical adventure as opposed to a TV show was actually kind of inspiring. I'm not going to lie.
I couldn't stop listening. Again, it was like a foreign language to me, but it somehow was compelling and I couldn't turn it off.
So
I listened for the full hour.
I missed it because I had not seen Game of Thrones yet, so I didn't want to listen to the actual spoilers in it. But were you comparing it to like the political systems and things like that, the way they were shaping...
Well, more so
the kingdoms,
kind of how the whole storyline was structured, you know, talking about what George R.R. Martin wanted from his story and how he kind of was influenced by it. For example, he was very influenced by Lord of the Rings. And he talks about how with his characters, it's not about good overcoming evil. It's about people dealing with, you know, humanity and how they deal with human conflict within themselves and kind of talking about how the characters have rounded out with that in mind. So
Lauren was born to break down Game of Thrones. Last night I'm listening, I'm like, this is like listening to a Bears post-game show at Hampton OB, but it was Richard and Lauren like pounding their fists and giving all these ideas. I'm like, this is a Bears post-game show. This is great.
That's awesome.
Right, because unless you knew the names and the language and the whole thing, it turns out that Lauren is fluent in Dothraki, which I thought was kind of weird, but somehow she is.
Her knowledge goes very deep.
Yeah.
It only took me a week to learn, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, my God, the geeks. Those two are... It is unbelievable.
She didn't need the subtitles when Daenerys gave her big speech to the Dothraki warriors.
Nope, she was right. As a matter of fact,
turn those off.
She screen-talked in Dothraki. We were all watching the show together, and she was like, T'Karis! Did I have that right?
I don't know.
Anyway, the point that should be made about what happened last night was that I learned something. New tricks, very hard to learn. But I thought between the two of them, there were amazing observations about how what this arc has been, this 8-year arc or whatever it's been, however long it's been on television.
Yeah.
Of taking us not through being about political symbolism of the moment is really not what this is about. This is sort of about the whole arc of human history and how politics and love and family and
duty,
all of those things,
loyalties,
duty, right,
have influenced the way things shape in terms of leadership. But I thought that was interesting the way they threw in that comment at the end there about you're going to have the people decide, and then the rest of the like village elders all like laughed or whatever.
At democracy,
like what?
Right. Sense, yeah.
We wouldn't do that.
Exactly. No, my dog should have a vote, or my horse, or whatever they said. And it was, and that's really a that's sort of where it is.
Right? Yeah,
it's kind of where we head, and there was just a lot of stuff that was in this that it was a beautiful thing, and I that's why I think shows like this can really be uplifting experiences for the viewers, and then
sure,
and live on for people will look at this art 100 years from now and say that it's not really the same way that we look at Shakespeare or that we look at Frost or we look at any of the, you know, the writers that, you know, influence they're sort of, you know, forever people, right? That what they're writing about and the themes mm-hmm. are universal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the ancient, you know, Greek philosophers and writers. It's that they were talking about the same stuff. Often the same kinds of things were happening in Game of Thrones. You know, some Greek god was having sex with his sister, and then the next thing you know, another guy gets mad. And right.
Mm-hmm.
So it's about love. It's about passion. It's about, you know, desire. It's about greed, envy, all of those things. And that's, and so 100 years from now, that this piece of art will stand up.
It was shot so beautifully, too, I thought. I wanted to go back and watch it again with the visuals, the cinematography of it. Just, it was pretty cool. I know there's a lot of disappointment out there, as we all expected, about people didn't like, you know, the way it ended. Did you like it, Lauren?
I'm happy with it. I mean, again, it's an ending, so it's hard to get right, if you can even say that it's right. But I think if you see characters that you have fallen in love with be happy in the end, then that's a win. You're not gonna get it all, you know, mm-hmm. especially not with this show. So I was happy with it.
Show is up. Our version of it, actually Richard and Lauren's version of it, is up at WGNradio.com. You do sort of hear me trying to just jump in from time to time.
Did you get the?
Yeah, there was one where Ro
called it a graphic novel.
Yeah, Ro referred to them as graphic novels, and she's Lauren's like, get a load of this idiot. He thinks they're graphic novels.
Wrong.
Although then Richard later said graphic novel, and she didn't correct him.
Because Richard knows. He's got a little more
oh, that's a whole context. Other thing. That's a whole other thing. All right. So anyway, so thank you for doing that last night, and thanks for those who are listening. If you are a Game of Thrones fan, you've seen it now? Have you seen Game of Thrones?
I have, yes. Okay, so I had to watch it very late because we had kids in the house, and they had to go to bed.
Right, and you can't have the
they cannot
the
be involved
and the sister
in,
having
no,
sex.
No, 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 no. I knew there was some things that were more adult content, so not to be seen by the kiddos.
Right. Every once in a while, a guy gets stabbed in the eye. You know, they love that. They
know,
love
right.
that move there.
Well, especially after watching last week when everybody died. I was like, well, I don't know what's going to happen here. I just be safe.
All right. Very good.
Yes.
Coming up, Ben Bradley joins us from the WGN-TV newsroom. He'll have his own thoughts on this, the start of a new era. First day of the Lightfoot era in Chicago. But first, let's check in with Kim. What's coming up with the news at the bottom of the hour?
Rose, Chicago's new mayor says, get ready, reform is here.
Then there's this. 16-inch softball, Chicago's homegrown version of the game, is fun, but some players pay a heavy price. A medical watch report tonight on WGN TV News at 9 o'clock.
Oh, that's interesting.
Did you ever get hurt playing softball, Rose?
I've gotten hurt playing everything.
Maybe just watching.
I got hurt. My feelings have gotten hurt playing softball, I can tell you that.
It certainly got hurt at the fast pitch at White Sox.
Yes.
Guaranteed rate.
Well, that's a separate issue.
It's very hurt
Kevin
there.
Is a very sensitive man
mm-hmm.
about these.
The worst is when you slide in 16-inch softball and you tear up your thigh, and then the entire summer it never heals. Continues to like stick to your shorts.
But did that happen to you?
Ow.
It's the worst.
That's the worst. Stick to your shorts. Wow.
Yeah, you never ever had like a really nasty sliding burn on your thigh from playing 16-inch? No? That's just me?
Oh.
You guys must not be 16-inch softball player.
Ben, do you know what he's talking about?
I am vaguely familiar, but it's been a long time since I risked my body like that.
I'm the guy that brings the glove to the 16-inch game. Yeah.
I know what this is. If they hit it really hard, my fingers are going to hurt.
He's at the sporting goods store buying the triple X glove just so it works for 16-inch
sure.
softball.
Why take the chance?
I just had a manicure, damn it.
It is 16-inch, though, is fun. Any sport you can do where there's a keg involved, I think is all good.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just heard you play the Victory Auto Records commercial. Did mm-hmm. you know that came out 34 years ago today?
Get Out.
The commercial with the guy who's got the wide watch band and the mullet, and he's taking the money.
Does he still get residuals, any of those folks? Do we know this?
You know, Dean Richards actually did a story updating it, and I remember, I think, and forgive me if I'm wrong, but I think Dean said, you know, the guy, he was just some random employee who was working at Victory Auto Records, and they kind of drafted him into it, and then the commercial became the stuff of legend. Kind of like the Empire Carpet commercial. He was the guy who became the Empire Carpet guy, was the ad man who came up with the ad, I believe, if memory serves, or wrote the jingle or something like that.
He's a VO guy, I think. He was a voiceover guy.
Yeah.
And then he ended up being, you know, like, synonymous. And what is interesting about that is they've continued him on posthumously as a cartoon.
After his...
I would like to point something out to the people at Tribune or ABC or wherever... I refuse to continue on as a cartoon. Not that anybody would ask for it.
You do not give your rights in perpetuity.
No.
To your image.
No. I will not go on as... Because if I go on as a cartoon, they're going to put the words they've always wanted to put in my mouth. In my mouth. And I will. I cannot let that happen.
You have lived on in the form of a voodoo doll with some of your former bosses. I know. But never as a cartoon.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really true. Yeah. Hey, what do you got coming up? Obviously, the Lori Lightfoot.
Yeah, what do you guys
now,
think
just
of that?
Now, minutes ago, she fired all the aldermen.
Well,
they're feeling the heat. That's for sure.
Yeah, so this is an interesting issue. Aldermanic privilege, right? So, when an alderman can call up any city department and say, "Hey, I've got this issue, or I've got this guy, and I really need your help."
Yeah.
Depending on the strength of that alderman, historically, that has carried a ton of weight in this city. And what Lightfoot signed today in her first act as mayor was an executive order that basically says, hey, alderman, you can't meddle in the city departments unless it's specifically provided for in code. Now, she's saying you get a vote in what happens in your ward, but not a veto. That was her line. And it is that aldermanic privilege, that stamp that the aldermen have that can juice anything through the process with little or no question, that has gotten many of our aldermen into trouble over the years.
Oh.
Because you wanted a liquor license, you needed a zoning change, you wanted to update a Burger King.
Right.
Hello, Ed Burke.
We saw that. Yeah, it seems like the permanent licensing, the zoning is separate. It seems like some of those projects get a lot of attention because neighbors tend to have loud voices on these things. But the permanent licensing, there's so much of it. The volume is such that it seems as if aldermen can do a lot of that without anyone noticing, which is the part of it she wants to crack down on.
Right. The argument from the aldermen has been, hey, look, my residents elect me to be their voice in city government, and unless you're going to allow me to help them, quote unquote, navigate through the process, you know, what good am I? I'm just calling 311 like every other joker.
But the oversight is the issue. There's just so much of that.
Well, how it's been abused has been the issue. Yes,
true.
In theory, you would love to have an alderman be able to call up and say, boy, you know, it's been, you know, some ungodly amount of time since my constituent has been trying to get a permit to renovate their Burger King and to, you know, put a cut in the sidewalk to allow for a better driveway location.
Right.
The problem becomes when you have to have that alderman's stamp of approval, and the only way to get it is by giving him your legal business.
So what that moves to, right, and that was wrong. But now, allegedly wrong, right.
I think it was pretty wrong.
Well,
but I know, you're talking
concept,
specific
the concept
case.
Is wrong. Yes. Yeah, we'll go
hypothetical
with that.
Hypothetical concept.
Hypothetical.
Look at all of us just remembering our journalism class on legal ethics.
It's like, it's not wrong to hand an alderman an envelope. It's only wrong if there's allegedly cash in the envelope.
No, if you can hand an alderman cash if you want, just as long as it's not a quid pro and a quo for the quid and the quo.
Okay.
Right? You could give a guy anything you want.
Please consult with Mike Monaco before you do anything, though.
Did I do it wrong? Anyway, here's the thing. The idea here is that someone's going to get a payoff. They just don't want the alderman to have it. All right, I get it. But now, let's stay with the water department, because that's what we've been talking about.
Sure.
So you got
a good example.
You got the water department, and you need to get a meter changed or, you know, a pipe.
Installed.
A meter installed, for example. And they don't show up. Over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
That
right.
has happened. It happened to a friend of mine.
It definitely did. And it can take months and months and months for this very simple process to happen.
And what do you do? So, you know, normally that's what an alderman is there. To, you know, you elect the alderman to be sort of the person you're, or the alderman staff.
The voice
to be
of the constituent.
Your guy.
The,
yeah.
To be the constituent for you in that system. And you call them up and go, listen, I or her, and you go, I haven't had, and I've been trying to get a hold of this, you know, the water department to do this, and they haven't done it, And who, what are you supposed to do? So then the next, see, here's what will happen, though. Before, you would go to the alderman and go, hey, you need some for a Christmas fund? What's going on? Here you go. Here, there's something. It's like giving bottles of liquor to the garbage guys. Hey, it works. But the problem now is you're going to have to go find some city water foreman to, you know.
Right. That's always the problem, is everybody always wants to have a guy. And somebody's always going to need to have somebody represent their interests in the city. Unfortunately, that's how a big bureaucracy has historically worked, right? Where, you know, a big bureaucracy will sometimes fail the little guy, and the little guy or the medium-sized guy or the guy with a little power,
right?
You know, will attempt to say, okay, what's a better way to get this done?
Yeah. How you doing? It's followed by that. You doing good? I'm doing
well,
good.
Well, but the problem becomes, okay, so now an alderman is not supposed to intervene in a water department problem.
But
so
that's
what?
Not,
now
to
we
be
call,
fair,
now
that's
we
not
call
permits and licensing.
The mayor's office?
It's not permits and licensing. That would still fall under the aldermanic umbrella.
Of constituent services.
Right, mm-hmm. Sure. Getting, you know, meter, getting some signs installed for disabled parking or things like that. That, you know, potholes reporting, you could do that.
The stuff you can't really make any money on,
yeah,
is that what you're
exactly
saying?
Exactly. You don't bribe
money.
Somebody necessarily over that kind of stuff. Or even people get their water shut off.
Hey, easy about who you bribe for what. And, you know, no job too big or too small.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well,
no bribe too big or too small? Is that also?
Look, it was just a really fascinating moment today at that inauguration. As Lori Lightfoot said, you know, some people say Chicago isn't ready for reform. Well, get ready. Reform is here. And at one point, she turned around and looked at the 50 aldermen sitting behind her.
That was significant.
Yeah. Hey, you see me? She did the thing where you point at your eyes and then their eyes. I'm watching you. I'm watching you.
All right.
Yeah.
Good luck, Ben.
Be interesting to watch.
And all this. Thank you very much, sir. Yep. We'll see you tonight starting at 4 o'clock on the WGN-TV News. Ben Bradley. All right, coming up on the other side here, John Cass is going to join us from the Tribune, and he's going to tell us what his thoughts are and what he saw here today. But first, let's check in with Kim Gordon. She's got the news right now.
No official in the city of Chicago, elected or appointed, should ever profit from his office. Never, ever. The requirement that people must give more to access basic city services must end. And it will, starting today.
Hey! Oh, whoa.
Not so fast.
What are you doing?
Who sent her?
Right. What the? How do you think people get paid around here?
A lot of people not happy with that speech.
John Cass joins us right now. Your thoughts of those shots fired across the bow. And when she said those words, she turned around and looked at the city council.
And she said what she didn't say, but she wanted to say, I will crucify all of you on the road to Marine if you take one dime. But that's what it was. It was like her Khaleesi moment, right? It's like, you're not taking any money. No one's you're in politics to make money. Now she's telling this to a room, not only the guys up on and women up on the stage, but everybody in the audience. Uh-huh. They've all been in politics for years to make money.
There's no other way,
how
right?
What language is she talking
about? Well, and you hear the talking from the pushback from the alderman today. She's already signed her executive order on aldermanic privilege, limiting some of their...
Who pushed back?
Well, you're hearing even Alderman Lopez says, this is going too far. We have other ideas about how we get there. This isn't the only way, and she needs our support. You don't want a war with your alderman. Is this another setup for a council war?
You know what? When Alderman... I like Ray Lopez, but every time he talks, I got a feeling that there's a guy with, like, a pink guy with a pinstripe suit and a Kelly green tie and those gold wire frames and the big gold watch, and he's pulling strings like, Ed Burke, you know?
A guy
like the puppet
like that,
master.
Yeah. You know, this
same
reminds
with Beal. Same with Anthony Beal.
So when Harold Washington was elected back in 1983, there was a meeting on the southeast side of the city of Chicago in a guy's house who ended up becoming a fairly... This is all public record now. Mm-hmm. This has all been told in the books. In which a number of aldermen, and then a number of Hispanic union bosses and other union bosses, you know, some of the bigger unions, and they all got together in this guy's house.
Rick Castro.
Yeah, and they were trying to figure out how, you know, now what do we do? Because now here's a guy who's going to come in, he's claiming he's going to reform all this, he's going to take it away from our guys, and he's going to give it to his guys.
Right, because right? That's what it was all about.
And that's when the first council wars started.
But I think in this context, I don't think Lori Lightfoot is here to be a rainmaker for some and not for others. Remember, mm-hmm. She did not run a campaign. A real smart writer talked about this on Sunday, in his column on Sunday, mm-hmm. whoever he is. But she did not. She did not run a messianic political campaign like mm-hmm. Harold Washington did. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like it's our turn or whatever.
Right.
There wasn't a feeling. She didn't run like for mayor like Joan of Arc.
Right.
I will be the Joan of Arc. No, it was really kind of calm in that. But she was saying, no more, you know, we're going to change things. No more making money. And that's amazing.
Well, then these people are going to have to get out because of the money that they make as their salaries is not enough to keep up their lifestyle.
Well, I mean, for Ed Burke, the money is that's just tips for him, what he's making, right?
It's true. It's an excellent point.
You know, but for the others, they'll have to work. Yeah. And you know what? The thing about Burke and the slow Eddie and fast Eddie Verdoliak and others who've made money, you know, leveraging politics, they worked hard at the details of government and what they did. What she's going to do is she won't let you come in as an alderman and say, Cass and Roe are building a hot dog stand or a bar. No, I don't like those two. No, you have to actually know what the code is, alderman. And go, you know, how many violations and what it,
yeah.
And is it in keeping with the code in order to shut it down?
Does she need the alderman's support, though? I mean, doesn't she need them? Even Alderman Lopez said, we need a budget passed. You need our support for that. You're going to need our help with all these other things you want passed. Almost like, hey, what are you doing here? You know, you've got the people on your side with this mandate of 75% voting for you, but don't you need us, too?
Yeah. I think she does need them, but she won in every ward.
Mm-hmm.
And
she won 75% of the vote. Let us not forget this.
And there were many wards that she won huge when there were when there were aldermen working against her.
Yeah.
And community groups, including Men of the Cloth, reverends, working against her. Mm-hmm. And she wiped them out.
Okay. So I'm going to take it out to sort of a grander philosophy here. We are now living truly in the 21st century in the era of the individual because of social media, and everybody can be a star. It is now the...
Right, just like everybody's a columnist, everybody's a talk show host.
Right, exactly. And then everybody's got their own... And we now look at individuals as opposed to groupthink. You're seeing it happen all over the world. You're seeing this rise of autocrats. You see it even in Washington, D.C., where the president has decided that following on some of the things that Barack Obama did, you know, DACA and other things that he did single-handedly through executive order, the president is now making a high art form out of that, of doing that. You see leaders, elected leaders in the United States, deciding they're going to get around their legislatures because that takes too long and it's too much, you know, arm twisting. If you have a strong enough message that you can go directly to the people through social media or through a friendly media stream, you're probably going to win this thing because you are, as an individual, more powerful than those guys are as individuals.
She has 100 days. She's got the capital, as you mentioned now, but it's going to run out. And there's two things that are working against her. One is mathematics. If the budgets don't balance, the red ink doesn't care about your rhetoric. It's a deficit. It's a debt. The other thing is, I'm going to volunteer a name, Ro Khan, to go work for her. You can take Jeff Carlin, too. And I think
I don't go anywhere without Brian Altimer. That's a
separate
thing. Okay,
Brian, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I don't think she has enough people around her to know who's who and what's what and where the bodies are. For example, we talked about this the other day on the podcast, the Chicago Way. And thank you. And, you know, Mike Tatum wanted to donate some money to her, I think. I heard there was a story. Mike Tatum.
Mike Tatum is infamous for the trucking, hired truck scandal.
Well, he's a businessman, and there's nothing illegal or wrong about a businessman trying to give some money. It turned out that they said his wife gave money. But the fact is, when I first called them, they didn't even know who that was. They didn't know who Mike Tatum was. They didn't know who Freddie, Barbara.
Know.
What?
They did. The Lightfoot people did not know.
The Lightfoot people did not know who these people were.
Right, those names.
Rokan knows.
Sure.
So, Ro,
yeah.
You could help her if you just vetted.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Yeah.
She needs some loyal people around. But I think, doesn't she wear that as, she doesn't want to have all those clouded up individuals from administration's past surrounding her. And that's,
well, she has some already, like Sarah Palin. I mean, there are daily people around, right? But she
needs, got to have some of those people because they got to know where the bathrooms are.
But you need to know where the bodies are, so you, the bodies are buried, so you don't compromise yourself. Like,
it's a fair point.
You know, if you had Ro, he would say, do you want me to take you to Chinatown for dinner at midnight? And then those people would run.
Yeah, that's true.
Don't you have a theory about the Chinatown thing, Ro? If anybody, you did any deals with someone in Chinatown recently, you should probably just go to the feds.
Right. Oh, yeah, no, I did. Oh, I didn't make that point. I made that point on Friday. I'm like, if you met, and I just,
here's a hotel?
If you're an alderman.
The sound of his voice. Listen to this. Very good advice.
Just right now, if you're an alderman or you're a ward committeeman or anybody who's in this stream, and you met a man who was introduced to you as a Chinese national who wanted to invest money in your ward, to, you know, on maybe an empty piece of property,
sure,
a this, a that.
Right.
If that happened, and there was another guy with him who you probably know, right? It was like, oh yeah, no, this guy always brings me guys. You know, business guys want to do things,
especially if he likes massage parlors.
Yeah,
right.
If in fact that happened, or maybe another one of your fellow alder peoples, you know, brought this Chinese businessman who wants to spend the money,
right,
walk into the FBI headquarters on West Roosevelt and put your hands together like, lock me up now, because you know they have the tape.
Or the first thing you should do if it's at, you meet them at a restaurant, is just speak into the salt shaker like they did at Counselor's Row and say, how you doing, FBI? I'm here having a salad with Fred Rohde. And that's it.
Or also, don't look them in the eyes, because the cameras and the microphones are now in the glasses.
So is she toast or what? Did she just scorch her bridges by doing this?
No, I don't think she did. I don't think she did. I think what she did is she laid out the first shot. A lot of these people have been around a long time. They know that this is there's a populism to this moment in American and in Chicago politics. And so she's going to have to say things like this, and they're going to go, okay, whatever. But the problem is, since she is somebody nobody sent, it is very interesting that she doesn't have history with them. They don't know what to expect from her.
No,
they knew what to expect from everybody else.
Right.
Right? I mean, even from Rahm Emanuel, you knew what to expect, because Rahm Emanuel had been
Hanging around for years.
Northwest Side politics forever.
Trying to hang out at the same table with Ross Sinkowski and Steve Neal and Gina Giorgetti, and they'd say, get away. Go back. Go down the stairs where the kids are.
Right. that is true. Right. Yeah. So I just think that there's a lot of tension in the sphincter area on the second and third floor of
City Hall. The dragon glass that's yet to come, since everything is Game of Thrones with you, Robert.
Yeah.
And that is 219 South Dearborn. There'll be indictments soon.
Yes.
Yeah.
And who are going to be among
within
those,
days now, right?
Who are going to be among those who are going to be with Happy Endings Solis and
oh, geez, is that what we call them now?
I'm sorry. That's wrong. I should not have said that.
How come you don't say that about Robert Kraft, huh?
He said...
You know what?
I'm a Patriot fan. He said...
Me too.
Nice endings. Let's be accurate.
Yeah.
He said nice endings.
I like nice endings to books and movies and
right, like
plays.
The Princess Bride?
Yeah. It's a great ending.
It was a kiss. The greatest kiss that ever was.
I'm going to guess with 30,000 hours or whatever the feds have of videotape, I think that there's other issues that he's going to be worried about as well as the massage parlor tapes, which could be very embarrassing. I agree.
Oh, you're going to... Wait, Ro is going to love them. He's going to read them verbatim when they come. You know him, how he's going to
totally,
do.
Totally, yes.
I remember him years ago.
Yes.
I had to pull off the side of the road when he'd do that.
I know.
I would almost crash the car when he did that. I forgot what case it was. Yes. Kathy Crowell Webb's panties or something.
I don't know. No, it wasn't that. What? But I was, that was the other guy. But I will say that I'm very much looking forward to the verbatims of all of these. It's going to be a lot of fun. All right, John Cass, you can read him in the Chicago Tribune. You might have had a column. You look at the Sunday column.
It's very good.
Yes, I think it sort of explains what we're looking at for the next couple of weeks here.
I am the three-eyed raven.
Yes, you do. You see it all, don't you?
You're like welcome, King.
You're like an iron worker, local one, on top of the Sears Tower, looking at the entire city.
I guess, or I could be. I'd rather be the business manager in the Lincoln, on the ground level, having a cigar and looking up and saying, "How you doing?"
All right. The Chicago Way. Also, speaking of that, the great podcast with John Cass and our own Jeff Carlin. You can find that at WGNRadio.com. Let's find Kim Gordon in the WGN Radio Newsroom. What's coming up?
Aldermanic privilege ordered to be a thing of the past in Chicago.
Kim Gordon from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom at WGN Radio, coming your way in just a few minutes, 2 minutes to be exact. And then on the other side, a series of stories and White Sox tickets. I got a family four-pack to give away for the Cleveland Indians game on Friday, May 31st, a week from Friday at 7:10. And then our recap of Game of Thrones in the 4 o'clock hour as well. Kevin's going to love all of that. But first, 2 minutes to the news. It's the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. That's the postmodern way of hitting the post, kids.
Love that.
All right.
Well done.
Let me just say that there are so many stories here that we have to get to.
Sure.
In just these next few minutes. I don't even know where to begin. I do want to start, though, very quickly, because I don't know if we'll get a chance to do this later on, about this list that the Bears have compiled.
Yeah. Interesting.
Let's just do this with Kevin, because I do not understand why they want to do this. Isn't this going to cause, like, trouble in Bearland?
Yeah, well, they're just doing all these sorts of 100 promotions to celebrate the 100th year of the organization. But that was my initial thought, too, is like, well, you're kind of judging your own players. I mean, they brought in some writers, Dan Pompey, the longtime NFL writers, one or two guys that basically compiled the list. But yeah, that was my thought. I'm like, what if this is going to make some inner struggles between former players and things like that?
And they're only revealing 76 to 100, right?
Today.
Today.
So it's 25 through this
and they're
Thursday.
Moving
we'll
forward.
Know number
so
one.
So we're
going to
get
Thursday.
Top 50 tomorrow.
Correct.
Top 75.
Bottom
then,
50.
Right.
We'll get the top 50.
Wherever you want to put it, yeah. So,
right.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we're going to get the reveals of the top 25.
Exactly, throughout the week.
What is this based on? Just stats completely?
Yeah, just quality of the player, impact they had on the field, all those sorts of things. I'm glad Patrick Manley made it, the long snapper, rounding out the 100.
He should be higher than that, because he's the longest-standing Bear, right?
Yeah, longest tenured.
In terms of, you know, like, active. In that era, now think about that. The kickers that he worked with in that era, everywhere from Butler, to Gold. He had, and those were two of the most prolific kickers in NFL history, let alone Bears history.
And Manley was a captain for many years.
Right. And he's, and the punting game, depending on the punter, there were a couple goof punters along the way. But it wasn't, he was an excellent long snapper. You don't know how critical that position is until you don't have one.
Right. I mean, these guys are so good that, let's say Manley's snapping to a punter, he can actually spin it and rotate it so that when it gets to the hands of the punter, the laces are pointing up, which eliminates the need for the punter to have to rotate the ball and then kick it, because obviously you want to hit the round end of the ball, not the lace side of the ball. So he was great.
And for a lineman, technically he's a center, right? So he's as a lineman, he was very tiny by lineman standards.
Yeah, because long snappers aren't the size of modern-day offensive linemen. It's,
right.
I mean, they're bigger, of course, because you're still on
the
line.
He's tall, but he was, tall at 190 or something.
Right. Normally, long snappers snap it, and then they book it down the field. They're normally not doing a ton of blocking at the line. And if they do, it's more of a chip-and-then-go type play.
Yeah.
But Manley's 100. Eddie Jackson, a current Bear, is 96. We talked about Cutler coming in at 85.
Right. Willie Gault at 83.
Willie Gault, 83. And Brandon's-
oh, my God. Isn't that something? Wait a second. That just tells you how mad they are at Jay Cutler.
Right.
That Willie Gault is higher on the list than the guy who has basically all the offensive production records at the quarterback position.
Right. And I thought it was surprising. Alshon Jeffrey's 80. Brandon Marshall's 81. You're telling me those two receivers had a bigger... I mean, Cutler was with the team longer than both of them.
Stop sticking up for Jay Cutler.
I'm not really sticking up for him.
He was 51-51 record, and he was terrible in the fourth quarter when it mattered. It was terrible.
Well, and no leadership. He just didn't care.
Right.
Oh, yeah, Brandon Marshall gave a ton of leadership.
Does leadership get points?
No, and he had an attitude later on, but
Right.
Yeah, Alshon Jeffrey had a great attitude.
If you were totally disinterested about playing at all times, did that count on the scale?
I'm sure they weighed it all, Anna. I'm sure they factored in, you know, the criticism that you and many Bears fans have for Jay Cutler.
Good. I'm glad.
I always felt Jay Cutler was never bad as some people depict him as, but I also thought he was never as good as some, actually.
He had all the athletic gifts in the world. All of them.
All right. Well,
he just wanted to be a farmer in Nashville, a fake farmer.
Right. You just wanted to raise goats.
A reality TV farmer.
He just wanted to make a lot of money doing nothing at all.
Okay. He could have gone to Farmville and done the exact same thing. He didn't have to do this, you know, in front of the cameras.
We can all agree Walter will come in at one, and I think Buck is two. You have Sayers in the top five, right?
Sayers.
Hamp is up there. Richard Dent. Well, the Singletaries.
I think you also in the top five without question. Sid Luckman will be in the top five. Mm-hmm.
Top five? You think so?
Yeah.
Ten to five?
I think in the top five. I think he sneaks in at four or five.
Okay.
Bronco Nagurski is going to end up in the top ten. Mm-hmm. You got to remember, this is 100 years. They're going to put those kinds of names in there.
Sure, mm-hmm. That's right.
So
I wonder where Kevin Butler and Robbie Gould go.
It's interesting.
Top, oh, I'd say 25. That they're
top 50.
Top 50 for sure.
Because they're kickers.
Yeah.
Can but, Devin Hester make the list?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I hope
He'll probably be top 25.
Top 25.
I love him. Yeah.
When you are the best in your category.
Right. Potentially a Hall of Famer, which we've never really seen just a return specialist get into the Hall of Fame. And that could actually happen someday.
Yeah. There is another debate here too, because you have to decide in the great linebacker legacy, right? You got Butkus, you got Urlacher, and you got Singletary, and you got Wilbur Marshall too.
And
he's
going to
be in there.
Otis,
and
be in there.
Mama's boy Otis.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
I mean, the 85 Bears could take like majority of the top 25. McMahon will be in there somewhere, obviously.
You know, I got to tell you.
So that's the thing, because you saw McMahon play, Ro.
I did.
You watched him very closely. How would you weigh, because he won the Super Bowl, obviously, so he's going to have better, obviously.
But he won
status.
A Super Bowl in a season, in those last two seasons, the 84 season, 85 season, out of the potential 32 games he could have played in the regular season, I think he ended up playing in like 12.
And his numbers were not that impressive.
No. No.
I mean,
he was a guy that started and finished 12. He started, I think, more than that, but he didn't finish them all. He was very injury prone.
But he's probably the most beloved Bears quarterback ever, right? Because he was on that team.
Well, Sid Luckman.
Who even watched Sid
Luckman?
Listen,
I once kissed Sid Luckman in a booth at Gibson's. I'm sorry. I always have to tell that story. Yes, he's and I did not see him play. I understand that. But the thing is that when on national broadcast, when they would have to talk about when the Bears and Packers would play, and they'd have to talk about the number of quarterbacks that the Packers have had since 68, it's like four of them, and then the Bears have had something like 400, right? And they would do that list.
Right.
That, and they always
saw
go, since Sid Luckman, it was always, that was the guy that they started with. Since Sid Luckman, I think Sid Luckman's last game was like 1949 or something.
And how many years roughly was he with the team?
I think 14 or something
A long time. Okay. Yeah. So then it was.
Whatever. I'm just guessing at that, but it's like a decade.
But a long time. So it was contrast to the.
See, I think this is why they're doing the list. We're debating about Bears players on May 20th for just some, you know, they muster up conversation with this. It's all, they have this huge convention coming up June 7th through the 9th in Rosemont, the convention center, which should be pretty cool. Nice. They're doing a ton of stuff for this 100 year. I think it's cool. I think they should. The amount of history with this team.
A little bit awkward is that Green Bay did this last year, because technically Green Bay was the Green Bay Packers, you know, for the year before the Bears.
Mm-hmm.
We're the Chicago Bears.
Right.
And so they don't line up. And this is the 100th year of the NFL. even though it's the 101st year of the Packers. Don't ask me. I can't figure it out. And it's really irrelevant. What is relevant is that you want it all to be one thing. And I do think it is spectacular that the Bears and the Packers lead this whole thing off. I think over the last number of seasons, you know, when they've been doing that, you know, when that these two teams being the seminal figures of the NFL, are they, you know, they're basically the sperm and the egg of the NFL.
And we can all agree on that.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Even we can. Tim.
Yeah. And so that is the most important part of, you know, of, you know, this legacy. And so I'm glad that they're doing it, but I just think it's weird, man. I just think it's going to make, because they have current players on there. There's going to be some bentness out of this that's, you know.
Well, you can blame, I mean, is it two guys, the two Hall of Fame sports writers who are picking them?
Don't you have to put Khalil Mack?
Don Pearson and Dan Pompey.
Don't you have to put Khalil Mack in there? Because Khalil Mack, just because on body of work, even though he's only had one season with the Bears?
I mean, you look at the list here. I mean, of course, you have to put Khalil Mack. But I don't know how they factor that in. The guy's been with the team for 1 year, but still, I mean, it's Khalil Mack.
Right.
Right.
Hey,
so there'll be much debate over this. Hopefully no brawls break out at the convention for former players.
Oh,
I was better than you, punk.
I'm going to tell you that Steve McMichael will be involved in a brawl.
Oh,
that's all I'm going to. It's just a prediction.
Strong prediction.
I would love to
prediction.
Hear OB's thoughts on this whole thing when it's done.
Will OB be on that list?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely, right.
Where will he be on the list?
Yes, where will he be on the list?
I don't know.
So I think that we are going to have to.
Ham's got
to
be a top 10, right? Hall of Famer?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, top 15 for sure. Probably top 10. It's hard.
It is hard.
It's 100 years. Right. And they are going to go back. There are going to be, you know, there's going to be guys named, you know, Whitey Whiteman, you know, on the team. You're going to be like, who the f- was Whitey Whiteman? And you're like,
that?
Yeah. Turns out there was a guy named Whitey Whiteman.
Yeah. Like Gary Fensick and Matt Forte.
Right. I don't know Forte. I don't think Forte makes it.
No.
Oh, he'll make it. Absolutely, yeah.
You think so?
Yeah.
Fensick, I think. It's that 85 Bears thing. Doug Plank. I don't know how you leave Doug Plank off the list.
He's on the list.
He's on it.
He's in the top. He's in this one. I just had it in front of me. Where was he?
Between 75 and 100.
All right.
Yeah, he's 99.
Okay. Is Whitey Whiteman in the top?
I haven't seen Whitey Whiteman, no.
Keep on the lookout for that, okay? Rhea wants to know.
Are there coaches on there too, Kev?
Yeah, Luke Johnsos made it, and Jim Dooley.
Oh, my God.
Jim Dooley and Luke Johnsos. See, the thing, too, is interesting because Eddie Jackson's 96. When it's all said and done, Eddie Jackson can be a top, you know, way up on this list.
No Ditka?
Oh, Dick will be on.
Oh, there. He'll be on.
Again,
top
we only
10.
Have 25.
So he may,
top 10.
He'll be in the top 10 for sure. They may not put him in the top 5 just to kind of screw with him. That could be my guess, just to get him to act like he's not interested in being in the top 5 and then be mad about it anyway, because that's exactly what will happen. All right. Well, very interesting. They're going to get us to talk about it every day this week.
Yep.
That's what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Go Bears.
Very well done.
Go Bears.
All right. Stand by. Let's check in with Kim. What's going on at the bottom of the hour?
Former White House counsel Don McGahn won't be testifying to the House Judiciary Committee tomorrow.
16-inch softball, you know it. Chicago's homegrown version of the game is fun, but some players do pay a heavy price. It's a medical watch report tonight on WGN-TV News at 9 o'clock.
All right. Rope Concho, Anna DeVlantis, right here, coming up an epic discussion of Game of Thrones. And we're just going to... I just want to speak in code to hear Kevin lose his mind.
Hey, I enjoyed it last night. I wasn't kidding.
You did watch it?
I listened to the show.
Oh, the
show. Lauren and Roper. I don't know what it was. I was like captivated by it. I don't know what the hell they were saying, but I couldn't turn it off.
Captivated by it too, because I'm just sort of like, I don't know what they're talking about either.
I know, I did kind of get that vibe from Ro, where he's like, sort of kind of knew what was going on. And then just hearing Lauren and Roper do their best Hamp and OB impressions and slamming the desk and getting really into it.
It's true. That is what that was. All right. Right now, caller number 15 at 312-981-7200 wins a family 4-pack of tickets to see the White Sox take on the Indians on Friday, May 31st. Tickets at WhiteSox.com or call 866-SOX-GAME and tune in every Monday after 4 o'clock for another chance to win 4 tickets to a White Sox game, it says right here. That's a forward-looking statement. I don't necessarily stand by all the forward-looking statements on this program, but yes, I think for the... As far as my eye can see, and my third eye, Raven, can see, We'll be giving these away all season.
Great reference.
Yes. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. All right, good luck to everybody. We've got the news, and then we'll come back. We will talk about, you know, to me, the thing that gets me the nuttiest.
What's that?
Are all of these amateurs out there who think they know how to run a television show, and their qualification is they've got a smartphone,
uh-huh.
right? So they can send a tweet, a text message, an Instagram post, or whatever it happens to be.
You're talking about the Game of Thrones fans. They've really been going after the writers, right? The two, the lead guys.
Weiss and Benioff.
Yeah.
Brutally.
Yeah.
Brutally.
Yeah.
As if they forgot, you know, what had happened for seven prior seasons.
Hey, even what happened here. I mean, just as a fan of people who lay it all on the line and go out and make this kind of art, it's tough.
Not easy.
I mean, this is, you've got thousands of people in the production chain here. Mm-hmm. These are medium-sized corporations, each one of these shows.
You see it in the credits. It's remarkable.
And they have got to get them all going in the right direction. And to get that done the way they get it done, to tell the story, to be true to the story, to keep this thing alive as long as they have, to get the work out of the actors, to get the work out of the cinematographers and all the rest of the people. Obviously, their continuity people got fired at the end of last season, and then I don't know what happened to them.
The water bottle in this particular episode.
That's a little still unclear to me if that's a water bottle. Say it looks like a water bottle. Might be a boot.
It's the kind of thing you don't notice when you're watching it in real time. It's only after when the super critical folks say, oh, look.
Right. Okay.
Well, that always makes me nervous that it might be Photoshopped, too. Like, I don't think the coffee cup was, but now,
right. We know now that it's happened, wasn't. You know? Yeah. Right. I guess my question is, what all these people are all upset about it. When was the last set that you had to strike? I would just ask that.
That's a great question.
Yeah.
Let me read your script. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sorry. What show did you produce? All right. All of that is coming your way. But first.
The moment the gates fell, the battle was over.
She saw her friend beheaded. She saw her dragon shot out of the sky.
And she burned down a city for it.
Ah, it's easy to judge when you're standing far from the battlefield.
Would you have done it?
What?
You've been up there on a dragon's back. You've had that power. Would you have burned the city down?
I don't know.
Yes, you do. You won't say because you don't want to betray her. But you know.
Does it matter what I do?
It matters more than anything.
Oh, man!
That whole scene was epic.
Totally.
All right, there's your Game of Thrones moment. I loved the way the whole thing played out. I loved the series. It's maybe not my favorite series ever on television. Facts of Life, of course, was. But
take the good, take the bad. I like that.
It was a wonderful piece of art. And what it told us writ large about society and the human experience and the way that they captured it and placed it in the context of this imaginary medieval world was brilliant because it told everlasting stories. It was like Shakespeare in the sense that Shakespeare, mm-hmm. even though, you know, he was writing in the second millennium, he wrote a lot of stuff about, ancient Greece and, you know, the stories of long dead kings and things like that. It was always a look back at history. And then he would even make up these stories because he just wanted to tell the stories of human hopes and frailties. And that's what this was at an epic level, beautifully done, beautifully shot. And now just being torn down by handfuls of morons who have nothing better to do than to try to attract attention on social media by tearing things down.
It's true. It's happening. Highest watched episode of the entire series and highest watch episode and highest ratings ever for something on HBO.
Wow. I mean, I'm not that surprised, but...
Well, the show ended about, 9:25 last night?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I was just staring at Twitter right after 9, just like, okay, this is going to be good.
Here we go.
This is going to be good. And then the tweets just started firing in. Worst series finale I've ever seen in my entire life.
Those people have never seen the Seinfeld series finale then.
or many pointed out the Dexter finale. I love the Sopranos ending, but the Dexter finale was horrendous.
Right. And when you look at all of these great epic episodic pieces of art that really most of the great series are post HBO, right? That's after cable and pay TV. And now this is the last of the appointment television, where everyone's going to gather around on a given night, unless it's a sporting event or an awards ceremony or some other kind of a public event.
Mm-hmm.
This is the last time that tens of millions of people around the world, hundreds of millions of people around the world, are going to sit down for one thing, because that's kind of over, right? The sitting around and waiting on a series when you could just go to Netflix or Hulu or whatever it is and it just drops.
Just watch every single episode. It's true with this one. If you didn't watch it in real time, you sort of paid the price, because you really couldn't be near your phone if you didn't watch it in real time.
Everyone's been pretty bad about spoilers with the show. But again, I think it's because people that are really dedicated to the show expect everyone to be watching in time.
It's so much more fun this way. I mean, I was a diehard Breaking Bad and Sopranos and Mad Men. I remember getting hyped, just like all the Game of Thrones geeks last night. I was so pumped for those. And I remember, like, watching with friends and posting up. And, like, you get so jacked when you see the theme song opening up for the last time.
Yeah.
It's more fun this way. It's like a major event rather than somebody binge-watching 10 episodes in, you know, one night. And then, you know, most people haven't even seen all the episodes. It's just fun. It was fun this way.
And as Lauren pointed out last night on the Game of Thrones After Dark special that we did, and you can get that at WGNradio.com, This is an epilogue. The last 20 minutes, essentially, of the show was letting you all off the hook. Here's what happens to these characters. No one gets stabbed in the eye in the last 20 minutes. You're still you have a little PTSD where you're on the edge of your seat, like, oh, maybe they are. Is that a knife? What are they going to do? Oh no, that's a water bottle. They kind of set you up to just understand. And I think that is, a lot of people think that was a weakness. I think that's a greatness, because you don't have to sit around and go speculate. This is the way that the storytellers here wanted to end the series.
Yeah. Well, you get an ending without, you know, without having entire certainty. So you don't know exactly where Arya is going. You know she's going west of Westeros or whatever. You don't know where Jon is going with the wildlings. And you don't know how Sansa will be as, like, a ruler in the north. But you do know that that's kind of where the rest of their story goes. And you can kind of play that out in your mind the way that you want to.
Was the selection of Bran, though, shocking to everyone? Because it was to me, and even the explanation about it.
It wasn't for me, just because of all the things that I've read and looked into. It was a very common theory.
Spoiler alert!
Well, we can't talk about it the next day.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I really, yeah.
Yes, but you can. Go ahead.
I think what's weird is, you know, he very much pointed out that he couldn't rule. He's like, I can't be a ruler. I'm the Three-Eyed Raven. I don't want to be a ruler, blah, 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 like a lot of the other characters. But then, you know, twist of fate. Oh, actually, this is why I'm here.
Right.
So that I think he sees the way everything. They addressed it was weird.
Classic Three-Eyed Raven.
Well, also the way they addressed it, Tyrion said, who has a better story than Bran? And he's sitting next to Arya, who has a pretty good story to tell. Didn't she kill the Night King?
But she wasn't up for it. You know, she was disqualified from rulership. She was never going to be.
That's not her.
That's true.
And she's also not in the line for it. Right, because
she's a Stark, but yeah, that would be be complicated.
Right, but I think it goes to the male heir or whatever. Right, isn't that how it would go first? And that's how. And I think he's older than she is, or whatever.
But the thing is, they decided not to keep that structure. That was kind of the point.
There are great moments, and again, to all of the critics, when I see your show, I will feel free to criticize it as well. But what you saw last night was a really interesting recap of, what is it, 75 total hours, I think, of screen time.
Sounds right.
For this show.
That's a lot.
That there, it was a way to put a really nice button on the whole thing. And they did it in a, I think, respectful way to the audience that had invested so much time in this.
They did, and they even had the nice, you know, tip of the hat to George R. R. Martin with the whole writing of The Song of Ice and Fire in their own little history book in the end of the episode.
Why wasn't he involved with writing this?
He was.
Oh.
he hasn't even finished the last book, but he guided the writers with how it was going to end.
They got ahead of him because the show was such a hit, and then they also only had these actors and crew members for a certain amount of time. The artisans who put this show together, forget about the actors. You know, you understand that they get booked on other things, mm-hmm. but so do the all the other people who do this stuff, and it's hard to get everybody together. It's 500 people. That's in production. Then there's post-production people that do other finishing things, labs all over the world that color fix and do all the things that you have to do before you get sound mix, get all the other stuff done. But it's 500 people just to get the thing, the principal photography shot.
Yeah.
And so when you stop and think about all of that, they had to get done the way they had to get done. And George R. R. Martin seems like a like he's going to work on his own time schedule. Guys like that, mm-hmm. who look like they should be in scooters at Walmart but may not be, they're going to work on their own. You know, he's an artist. He's one of those guys. It's like, I'm just going to live the way I'm going to live. And they needed him to be done with these books in time to get done with their production schedule. He couldn't. And the rest was up to those guys to figure out. And it's pretty close to how... anybody, it's a kind of a Hollywood narrative for how to end something like this. You could have killed everybody, mm-hmm. but then people would have been, what? Or you could have done this whole Sopranos thing, which is stop, freeze frame. I will never forget. Mm-hmm. The loudest I have ever said WTF in the real words was that exact moment in, what was that, 2007 or something? When that was on, and I was like, I screamed it at my television. Because I was like...
You weren't happy.
And when you stop and you look and you go, oh, wait, oh, the cable went out.
Right.
Because it goes to black, right? It just, and you're like, wait.
Everyone thought their TV went out or the cable went out. Everybody's panicking.
Yes.
Well, they could have done the obvious thing, which they didn't do, to have John and Daenerys be together, right? That sort of happy, kind of Hollywood ending that you see. That these two love each other and they go off into the moonlight together and it's all great and pretty and perfect.
Which, again, goes back to George R. R. Martin's idea that it's not about good overcoming evil and a happy ending. It's about the complications we face within ourselves. And the reality was, Dany was starting to become power hungry because of how she was learning to rule and her family bloodline. Things had to happen that way. And then you see someone like John, who always wants to do the right thing, and now he's conflicted with how he does the right thing involving somebody that he loves. That's a reality that we all have to deal with in different ways. Obviously, not to the extent that he had to, but George R. R. Martin wants to slap us all in the face with, hey, this is how life really is. Just because every other TV show likes to have happy endings and, everything works out for the good guy and all the bad guys go to jail, whatever it may be, that's not life.
Mm-hmm.
I told you, Lauren was born to talk about Game of Thrones.
I know. She finds the meaning in it. I'm just like, look at the amazing pictures. It's so cool. Like when Daenerys came up on that platform that looked like an Egyptian pyramid to address her warriors, the victorious warriors.
Oh,
and
the
then
dragon
the
wings?
Dragon wings came behind her. That was just such a beautiful moment in cinematography.
Again, I just don't see that. I never saw that in Seinfeld.
No.
Never once did Jerry walk into the apartment with dragon wings behind him.
Never. Shot in such a beautiful way.
Right.
Oh.
It was.
Amazing.
Great piece of art. All right. Well, take your phone calls. 312-981-7200. People are there pounding away now wanting to talk about this. We'll pick it up on the other side. But first, Kim, what's happening in the newsroom at the top of the hour?
Can Illinois handle a recession? One analysis isn't so sure.
Stories of Matter coming your way with Kim Gordon from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. We're talking about Game of Thrones. We go to the phones, 312-981-7200. Maureen, you're on WGN.
Hey, thank you. One of the most funniest moments for me was when the council was meeting and
Samuel Tarly, yes.
Yeah, close. When he said, why don't we let the people choose? Why don't we, so they just thought that was the funniest thing. Everybody just fell out laughing. Let the people choose?
Right.
Are you kidding?
Right. I loved that.
Yeah. I think.
And then I was thinking, was that a subtle shade by the writers to our current modern day election system.
You know what I read in that, Morrissey, as I read it, was not just throwing shade at our current situation, it's throwing shade at autocrats throughout history, because that's exactly what has happened. You know, we've had these moments of, you know, democracy essentially as a political system is technically thousands of years old, right? The Romans, mm-hmm. but it is also new. It's kind of been newly minted again, and 200 years ago, and it's not popular with the powerful people. I'll tell you that right now.
They thought that was hysterical.
Yes.
What the people choose? You know, that can't happen. We'll choose for them.
Thank you, Morrissey.
Yeah, and going so far as to compare people to almost dogs, like, well, might as well let the dogs vote. Yeah, it was kind of harsh.
That's exactly what a number of the aldermen were saying today at the inauguration. Mary, you're on WGN.
Hi. I just want to preface, I am one of those people who have read the book several times, and I also rewatched the entire series before season 8 started. I don't have a problem with the writers, the arc that they took with each person. That's how they see it ending. They have their point, I have my point. I think for a lot of hardcore fans, there wasn't enough episodes to understand why things happened. Those missing 4 episodes out of season 7 and missing from season 8, you would have had a lot more explanation to understand why Dany all of a sudden is the Mad Queen. Or why Bronn is doing the things that he's doing. So I think shortening the seasons left you trying to figure out on your own how you got from point A to point B to point C. And we were so used to seasons 1 through 6 of having 10 episodes.
Yeah. Yeah, well,
by
having this, it done this way with these 2 6-season seasons, that it basically is just one season. And they just spread it out over time so that they get the maximum that they could out of it. And that is ultimately, you know, what was at play there. Because it has been, at the end of the, I hate, you know, it's a great piece of art, but it's show business. It's not show friends, as they like to say in show business. And so that they had to figure out a way to make the economics of it. As we pointed out, you know, you got thousands of people who work on these shows, and that's all they can do. Mary, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. We've got Kim Gordon in the WGN newsroom coming your way with the news in 2 little minutes. Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. Coming up in the 5 o'clock hour, A.B. Stoddard will be here.
Nice.
Talk about the things that are going on. Kind of an interesting development just this afternoon.
Yeah.
That a judge has sided with House Democrats asking that financial records from the Trump Organization be handed over to a committee at the House of Representatives. That's not going to make people happy. The president just a few minutes ago started talking about that.
Oh.
Yeah.
Discuss that.
He's got his own thoughts on this whole thing.
And then Mayor Pete appeared on the Fox News Channel.
He's
making
mad
his case.
The mayor. The president was mad about that, too.
He was.
He took on Fox News.
Very upset with the Fox News for even hosting Mayor Pete Buttigieg on their channel, the Chris Wallace Town Hall yesterday.
Now, so Fox News is only for him. That's kind of like when your girlfriend goes out with her friends and then meets one of your buddies from work and talks and comes home and goes, oh, he's a really nice guy, but you hate him. And then you're mad. You're mad at your girlfriend for talking to somebody that you don't like.
Well, and on top of that, guy friend trash some of the people that you really do like Laura Ingram and some of the other opinion people on Fox.
Okay.
While hosted on the Fox News Channel, and so that was not what he liked either. also spoke about you spewing hate. Didn't like that either.
Oh.
A couple things he said he really didn't like.
That's interesting. All right. Okay.
Yeah.
There he is.
Mayor Pete.
All right. And I guess the White House also going to keep Don McGahn from being able to speak, the former White House counsel. Mm-hmm. Again, you know, he's a counsel for the White House, not for the president. That's the White House is the people's house, as we like to say.
Yeah, I'm not sure the optics of that are so good.
I don't know. I don't think the optics of any of this have been very good, but it doesn't keep people from including major Republicans who apparently after 40 years in public service don't care about their long-term legacy, don't care about the first line of their Wikipedia, are willing to just whatever. You know, remember when I said all that stuff about the Constitution? I didn't mean any of it. Because we got a guy here now who's going to do exactly what we want any way he can. And that's good enough.
It's the way it is.
Yeah. All right, that's coming up. All right, are we ready? We're ready. Here we go.
It's the top five on the Rokan Show.
Five.
Let's go.
Four, three, two, one.
Now, it's the top five at five on the Rokan Show with Anna Tavlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
Checking in at
number five.
I, Lori Elaine Lightfoot, do solemnly swear that I will support the Constitution of the United States.
That I will support the Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of the State of Illinois.
And the Constitution of the State of Illinois.
And that I will faithfully discharge the duties.
And I will faithfully discharge the duties.
Of the office of mayor.
Of the office of mayor.
Of the city of Chicago.
Of the city of Chicago.
According to the best of my ability.
According to the best of my ability.
So help me God.
So help me God.
Congratulations.
There you have it. That, you know, she's the 56th mayor. She's 56 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So play 56 tonight in the lottery if you can.
We'll do that.
Sworn in. Now she... It's interesting because on her first few hours of doing what she did, she got over to City Hall.
Yep.
She, unlike the rest of the aldermen who just went out to go party.
Sure. It's what you'd expect on a day like today. Her mom's in town, her 90-year-old mother. It just brought tears to the eyes. A lot of people watching the inauguration today when she spoke about her and choked up herself. There's a family in town.
Mm-hmm. She then went over to City Hall and basically took away the aldermanic prerogative of the aldermen while they're still out at Erie Cafe drinking.
The executive order written and signed. Boom. First day.
Their phones are going off. Hey, what? She did what? What?
She might be serious.
Right. So she says this whole thing was just an invitation to corruption.
This does not mean that our aldermen won't have power in their communities. Of course they will. And it does not mean that our aldermen will not be able to make sure that the streetlights are working or the parking signs are in the right place or any of the thousands of good things that they do for people every day. It simply means this. It means ending their unilateral, unchecked control over every single thing that goes on in their wards. Aldermen will have a voice, but not a veto.
At which point she turned around and she looked at the alderman on stage behind her and...
Oh, she did.
They're all like, oh, hell no!
They're all up on stage and she did a little look around. I'm talking about you.
You see me? You see me? She also talked about I thought this was a brilliantly written speech in the sense that it used the imagery and iconography of Chicago to try and make a point, which is what you should do in inauguration speeches. That's what was done until a couple of years ago in inauguration speeches, where you make them sort of soaring and about the positives and hopeful, or they're all going to kill us, either way. Mm-hmm. But she used the four stars of the flag of the city of Chicago, and she talked about public safety.
When we hear a random bullet cutting a life short, People across the city from all ages and walks of life begin to wonder if Chicago is a place where they can continue to live and raise their children. Some have already answered the question by moving away, particularly from the hardest hit communities. The mass exodus that we have seen, particularly in the black community, saps the vitality of our great city. We must reverse the exodus by creating the reality of safety in every neighborhood.
All right.
4 stars. You said safety, education, stability in terms of finances and the fiscal ship, and then integrity, getting rid of the corruption of years and many generations gone by.
Stability. That's not a sexy star. That's an important thing. Nice. I'd make the blue line the stability line. I'd keep the stars for sexy things.
Because she's saying, supposedly we have the $700 million unfunded liability, and it's got to be fixed in her next budget. Now she's saying it's even more than that. That's not honest.
Oh, boy. Yeah, because they showed her the real files. That's like when they take you down to the basement of the White House and they show you the alien. It's the same thing. they take you like on your little transition day. They take you in. They open it. They got a guy who looks like Samuel Tarly who opens up a big dusty book and goes, I believe you may have misunderstood what we meant when we said there was a deficit. And she's like, what?
That's not what I thought.
Yeah. Checking in at
number 4.
Steve Doocy, you know, he's a Fox News channel guy. Mm-hmm. They have a man on the street segment, Deuce on the Loose, although I would call it Doocy on the Loosey. I think that's funnier.
I like that better.
Yeah.
More of a ring to it.
So we want to talk to the person on the street, the man on the street, the woman on the street, about a new law that's been proposed that people texting while they're crossing an intersection could get fined in the city of New York. And it did not really go so well because no one stopped.
Excuse me, ma'am. Hello? Hello? Excuse me. Hi. Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
It'll just take a second.
I really don't want it.
Okay. I don't think she has. She's in a hurry to go to work. Everybody's in a big hurry. Now, right over here, AJ. Here's a guy. I'm going to surprise him. I'm going to see if I can get his attention. Excuse me. Excuse me, sir. Hi. Excuse me. Can I ask a question? Everybody's busy.
Yeah,
I think that's it.
I don't think it's it. I'll tell you what's interesting.
Uh huh.
If you go out with a Fox News Channel mic flag, and you go to a little town in West Texas, everybody will talk to you.
Sure, very true.
You walk out with a CNN news flag in West Texas, no one will talk to you. In big cities, it's the opposite. You don't get a lot of people that'll stop and talk to you if you have even. I used to do this man on the street thing for Fox locally here,
right?
And you remember I was with you then,
yep.
And we'd go out and people would sneer. And Fox locally, Fox 32 has nothing to do with
nothing
the Fox
to do
News
with
channel.
It. And I had the Fox flag in Texas when I worked there, and people would swarm. They'd fall over each other to try to talk with you.
Right.
And like honk their horn as you drove the news truck.
I never had luck when I did man on the street interviews.
It's a hard thing to do because usually it's like a weighty issue. You know, like, what do you think about the $700 million budget hole? And you're stopping people and they're just like,
yeah, it's uncomfortable. They're like, leave me alone. You have a deadline. You're like, ugh. Bad memories.
It's not an easy thing to do.
Yeah, it isn't. It isn't. But in the meantime, and you also have to choose the people you have to look for, and it isn't just asking anybody. The reporters are often looking for the best story in the individual, too, right? You're looking for somebody who will represent a constituency for or against. You're kind of guessing. Yeah. And you're looking for the people. And I was
about
doing
a range of ages and things
right.
like that.
And I was doing it for comedy, so I was looking for goofy people. Not hard to find. This is not hard to find. Well, good luck to Lucy on the Deucey.
Uh-huh.
All right, let's. Oh, I'm sorry. It's the other one.
Maybe Steve Deucey on the Loose.
Yes.
Deuce on the Loose.
Deuce on the Loose, right.
I do like Deucey on the Loosey.
Deucey on the Loosey. Lucy on the Deucey, that's a different thing. That I saw that again. That's somewhere else on the internet. Let us now check in with Kim and find out what's happening in the news at the bottom of the hour.
Chicago's top three new leaders have two things in common.
16-inch softball, Chicago's homegrown version of the game. It's fun, but some players pay a hefty price. Medical Watch report tonight on WGN TV News at 9 o'clock.
Top 5 of 5 continues. Checking in at
Number three.
Here's a story I like. Finally, a story I like. I'd like to find a story I like. Mm-hmm. Not a whole like to like to like to like.
Found one.
Here's when Morehouse College, class of 2019, commencement speaker, stands up there. And, you know, commencement speakers. That can be rough business.
It's hard to get people to pay attention when it's an exciting day.
Right.
They want to get to lunch or dinner.
Mine was some expert on nuclear physics from Europe, some Nobel Prize winner.
How did that go?
For about 2 hours.
Oh.
And it was 96 degrees. And outside. It was not good.
I don't even remember who mine was. Is that sad?
Yeah. This year at my college was Jennifer Garner. That would have been much better. If were I only, a few years younger, it would have been all good for me. But
surprised you didn't go back for that.
Here at Morehouse over the weekend, Robert Smith, who is a billionaire, honorary degree recipient, decided that he was not only going to give them a speech that was rousing, he was going to pay off their student loans.
Wow.
On behalf of the 8 generations of my family who have been in this country, we're going to put a little fuel in your bus. Now, I've got the alumni over there, and this is a challenge to you, alumni. This is my class, 2019. And my family is making a grant to eliminate their student loans.
How about that?
How huge is that? That may be the best thing you can hear on graduation day.
Oh, my God.
Huge. I mean, God bless them.
Historically black college, Morehouse is. All male class. Great, great, great story there.
According to New York Times, he's the richest black man in America with a net worth of $5 billion from private equity.
Mm-hmm.
So
there you
have it. Giving back in a big way.
Checking in at
number two.
Saturday Night Live season 44 finale began with Alec Baldwin delivering a parody of Queen's Don't Stop Me Now as President Trump, of course. Cecily Strong as First Lady Melania, Beck Bennett as Vice President, and A.D. Bryant as Sarah Huckabee Sanders.
Don't stop him now. Don't stop him.
Because he's having a good time. Having a good time.
He's a loose cannon ripping up the laws of society. You can't subpoena him. He's gonna obstruct.
He's a billionaire. Unless you take a look at his tax return. He's gonna hide, hide, hide. Oh, there's no showing you.
I'm burning every bridge, yeah. Picking every fight.
That's why they call him Mr. Bad Advice. Cause he listens to the Fox News guys.
I wanna make a super straight man out of you.
They're just hitting a stride and the election season is coming.
Yeah, well, we shall see. And finally,
number one.
Over at The View, Meghan McCain had to apologize after spoiling the final episode of Game of Thrones during an on-air conversation. It began innocently enough, as they all do, when the den mom, Whoopi Goldberg, mentioned some Game of Thrones viewers were seeking counseling to deal with their grief, and then...
I spent 8 years of my life watching this, and it was a horrible ending. Horrible. Bran is the worst. Sorry, that's a spoiler. But, like, he didn't do anything, and now he gets to rule. It should have been the mother of dragons.
Oh, Megan!
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry you guys are so triggered by the end, me telling the ending.
I'm only on genuinely,
season 4. You guys are, like, genuinely upset.
I stopped.
Why is this a hot topic, then, if I'm not supposed to talk about
because
it?
Because I'm only on season 4.
What? I didn't know that.
And wait a second. I'm on season 0. I have not watched anything.
Ooh. Getting ugly there.
Yeah.
Ladies, I think, The View, go after Megan.
I'm afraid I have to be Team Meghan McCain on this one.
Come on.
The show's over. We cannot be responsible.
It's over.
For you not watching. Keep up, people. This is America. At least I think it's America. All right. Let's close this thing up. And then we've got the news with Kim Gordon coming away in 2 minutes.
The top 5 at 5.
Rokan Show with Anna DeBlantis,
yes.
Right here on 720 WGN. home of Game of Thrones knowledge, which is only good for the next hour and a half. After that, nobody will care.
It had a good run.
It did have a good run. Thank you, Kevin
Powell.
All right. A.B. Stoddard joins us right now. She doesn't care about any of this. The Game of Thrones that she cares about are happening in Washington, D.C. right now. And, wow. What a... As America devotes its attention to a fantasy that takes place ostensibly 600 years ago, we now turn our attention back to what we missed over the last couple of weeks while we were watching Game of Thrones, and it's a lot. A couple things happened today that are, I think, are of note, and I'd like to get your thought on them that are just breaking now. First of all, a federal judge has sided with the House. With a House committee that is looking for Trump Organization financial papers and saying that, yes, they got to hand them over. That's going to get that. I'm sure they still won't be handed over, and another judge will have to look at that. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it's been an unbelievable Monday. There's more news about the investigation into the Trump inaugural committee, and Trump is basically putting his foot down, insisting that Don McGahn, his former White House counsel, defy the congressional subpoena. As we learn of this ruling from this judge saying that the Trump administration can't block a congressional subpoena for his financial statements, it's just an incredible historic clash that there's no signs that either side is going to back down, perhaps. This ruling will give the Democrats a feeling that they should continue on the path that they're on, and that the courts, the third branch of government, will actually support their, you know, Article I constitutionally mandated authority to be a check on the executive, and that they won't need to proceed to the technical impeachment proceeding, which allows them to get their hands on more information. So we've talked about it on your show, and for those who are not following this at the granular level, what happened in Watergate was that they pursued an investigation, an impeachment proceeding, so that they could get the grand jury information. And right now, they can't get Don McGahn, they can't get the grand jury information. The Attorney General is not supportive of them getting. He's not trying to help them, and so they have been under pressure to begin that technical process, even if they never have a vote, so that they get their hands on more information. So this ruling tonight is interesting. It may encourage them to sort of continue to cool their heels on that. But that
doesn't mean they're going to get it, though.
No, right. And it doesn't mean they'll just hope. Yeah.
Because
you're right. I mean, there's burning pressure now on the Democrats to proceed to that next step, even if they, you know, never are going to hold a vote, though, because they are going to get their hands on this information and compel Don McGahn and Bob Mueller and everything else I just mentioned. They're not going to back down. So
but can't they play a game here? Can't the White House play a game with them and say, hey, no, we're just not doing it. We're not going to do anything until the Supreme Court tells us we have to, and maybe not even then. Right? I mean, that's the kind of posture that you see being taken.
Yeah, they do seem like they're running out the clock. That's all they're
doing. There's no question. It's just a question of, you know, and look, the Democrats are not going to back down either. Do they, you know, lock people up with the help of the sergeant at arms and the small, you know, jail at the Capitol?
Oh,
I don't know where we're going with I don't know how Game of Thrones we're going here, but I do think that the judge's language in this ruling about how, you know, it is the power of the Congress that has the power of impeachment to seek and obtain these documents, I think will bolster the case that they might prevail. But you're right. It depends on how quickly these other cases are resolved. And there is pressure that, you know, the idea if Don McGahn doesn't tell us tonight that he is not going to defy a subpoena and that he's going to stand by the separation of powers and the rule of law, and he's going to come, then if he doesn't testify tomorrow, there's going to be a lot of pressure on the Democrats to proceed, like I said, with that at least technical beginning, so that they can you know, get more information. So, you know, they're in a bad position, but they have no choice. They're not going to back down. It's a question of when they do what. But I think that they're shown that they're willing.
Question.
I mean, they've shown they're willing to lose. Trump has shown he's willing to lose every swing voter and you know, with all this defiance. And I think the Democrats have shown that they're willing to lose the election, too. And they haven't said they're going to, you know, proceed with impeachment, but it's looking like, you know, that's not far away.
Let me, about Don McGahn, for people who are not really familiar with the very specific players in this, and Don McGahn is certainly not, you know, a household name, I don't think. He had the best haircut, I think, in the entire administration, but and he's a tall, good-looking man.
A musician, he has to have his hair a little bit long, though.
Right. He was a lawyer who, you know, been on the private side of, like, campaign law and stuff like that. He came in to the Trump campaign fairly early on, and because he's from one of the best firms. And he helped with all the campaign law stuff that they had to deal with and bringing them up to speed. Because, again, a lot of the people around Donald Trump back in 2016 were political amateurs, right? And or people who, you know, failed and, you know, probably should have or certainly will now go to jail. But they, you know, so because all the big people were with the other candidates, right? They were with Cruz or with Bush or with, you know, some of the other campaigns. So McGahn did come in, and McGahn was probably the biggest adult in the room in early 2016 for the Trump campaign. And then he made him the White House counsel, which and McGahn, you know, to my eye, never seemed like he was really all that enamored with the idea of it, but he was doing a job. And then he got in, and he got into a number of fights that have been now essayed in all of those books that have been written about the trouble in the White House, the palace intrigue stuff. And, you know, he eventually leaves the White House, and he was the White House counsel, which is not the private lawyer for Donald Trump. It is the lawyer for the presidency. Right. And
well, that was news to Donald Trump. Yeah,
right.
But you're right.
And so now he's out. And the question is, it seems to me that Don McGahn is the kind of guy who, you know, kind of understands the throw of history here, might just stop and go, listen, what is he going to do to me? What's the worst he can do to me? And what's the worst of these people? You know, remember that Trump has fans and followers. He doesn't necessarily have people who are going to, you know, have any, once he's gone, it's like when Game of Thrones is gone, where do the fans go? They go to other things. They go to other politicians along the way. But these are not necessarily powerful entities that these fans represent. And I don't think that there's really that much of a risk in taking on Donald Trump, if I'm Don McGahn.
Well, that's interesting you say that, because the reporting out tonight shows that Trump has been threatening to sort of injure Jones Day, Don McGahn's law firm, which is so that it, you know, its influence in Republican circles is diminished. This is sort of a big parlor game, right? Is Don McGahn going to be that person? Is it going to be John Dean? John McGahn was asked right after the Bill Barr summary was released in late March about the Mueller report to come. He was asked by the White House to come out right away and say there was no obstruction, and he declined. He said through his lawyers he didn't feel pressure, but he declined to do that, even though he has said that he didn't feel that Trump was trying to obstruct justice. The problem is, if he were to go and testify, they will be asking him why he told Priebus, Reince Priebus, the chief of staff, and Steve Bannon, the then counselor, whatever, his chief strategist, that he was threatening to resign. Why did he use, you know, terms like crazy, you know, S-word to describe what Trump was asking him to do? Trump had called him and asked him to call Rod Rosenstein because Mueller had to go. So that testimony would be very damaging to sort of this moment in this narrative. There's no question. And so we are going to see what the effect of that pressure is. People have already been concerned. Some on President Trump's staff in April that his tweets about Don McGahn, you know, was basically witness intimidation, calling him a liar, basically saying that, like, Mueller was never get fired, but McGahn was maybe going to get fired. So we don't know if he's been intimidated, and we don't know if he's We don't know what he's going to do. I'm thinking he's going to not come.
I gotta just stop this whole insanity right now. And I just want to say this. You know, when Donald Trump goes away, the Republican Party will still stand. It's going to look a little different, and it may act a little different, but it is not going to be there. Jones Day or the other law firms or accounting firms or other, you know, businesses that get associated with parties, you know, because they're doing work for them. And a lot of these big law firms work for both sides, right? You got lawyers, they hire lawyers who are big players, you know, on both Democrats and Republicans because they want the business. That Donald Trump will not be able to, in the specter of Donald Trump will not be powerful. It won't be, because he's not going to be a legacy president. He's going to be a flash in the pan moment. There will be some successes. There are going to be some failures, and there are going to be some moments that America will just never want to revisit. And I think that, so whatever he thinks he's going to do, I think that these people have to have they have to kind of take the Chinese view on this and look a little further into the future than 2020.
I of course, you and I always agree on these matters, but look at congressional Republicans. Have they taken the long view?
No, they haven't.
At the other side of this, they're going to want, as we've said so many times, they're going to want the truth. They're going to want the facts. They're going to want the rule of law. They're going to want credibility. They're going to want the moral high ground. They're going to want all these things they've given away. And watching the way that they have come after Congressman Amash of Michigan is so unfathomable to me. Of course, I thought that they would run into the trunks of their cars and then be missing and be busy and not answer reporters' questions. I thought when pressed they would respectfully disagree. I was actually horrified to see the way that they have come out to make sure that everybody knows that the RNC, not only the chairwoman but her spokeswoman, you know, allies like Dan Bongino will go on Fox and say leave the party. Everyone will come after you, get a primary challenger, and then the lead Republican in the House, Kevin McCarthy, will say it's so disturbing, you know, he's wrong. I mean, no one said I respectfully disagree with Justin Amash.
He's a Republican congressman who over the weekend called for the impeachment of Donald Trump and said that he obstructed justice
He's crossed the impeachment threshold with his obstruction, which is what the 1,000 bipartisan group of former prosecutors have said as well, that Mueller has showed us with the report all these, you know, things that technically meet the threshold of obstruction. So it's like no one's taking a long view.
No, I get that. But I think what they're looking at, too, is that people will forget. Like Republicans are figuring if they lose in the presidency and, you know, maybe some more seats or maybe even the Senate in 2020, people will eventually forget that, you know, what they stood for. And then they're just going to continue on and, you know, we'll just move on to whatever the next thing is. And they will vilify whoever the president is. Pete Buttigieg will be the guy that they go, you don't believe that how he is. Look at how he's trying to be an imperial president. He's trying to be a king. You know, it'll be the whole thing. It's the same stuff that, you know, we've been a party to for the last 20 years of American politics, or even longer than that. All right, we'll leave it there on that. I'm trying to be hopeful, AD,
I will come on your show tomorrow and give you such props if you get Don McGahn to testify. I'm gonna eat my shoes.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to feel dark about this. He's not coming.
Okay. All right, we'll see. I think you're probably right. I will not eat my shoes because I think you're right. Thank you, AB. All right, we'll talk to you.
There
she is, the great AB Stoddard. Let us now check in with Kim Gordon. What's coming up at the top of the hour?
And as you were talking about, score one for the Democrats in the fight over the president's financial records.
Rocon Show with Anna DeBlantis right here on 720 WGN.
So they're saying that Mayor Lori Lightfoot, I got to get used to saying that, made herstory. And you, not a fan of the herstory word.
Oh, I get it.
There you go, Kev. There you go.
Kev said it 5 minutes ago.
If she said herstory, and I was like, yeah.
I heard it right. I was just sort of saying, did she really say that?
Did she say?
Yeah. She said herstory. Yeah,
I heard it.
That's a thing.
Oh, I didn't know that.
That's been a thing for, mm-hmm. I don't know, last number of years at least, sure. Which is the idea of clawing back language, which is, you know, it's very, very, you know, very popular. You know, the left does it. Left does it more than the right, but the right does it too. Like, they didn't want to say Democratic Party anymore. It's got to be the Democrat Party. And now that they've gone so far with it that it's even the Democrats are doing it. You know, it's sort of like, oh, well, we'll own that.
Our state passed legislation that was January 1st. It started where you can't have you have to have gender neutral names, or you should refer to gender neutral names of people who hold political office. Alder
person,
woman, alder man. I guess alder person would be the right way to say it.
Just be gender neutral. You're not allowed to say alder man because that would make us feel bad, or alder woman because that would make the other people who are not feeling bad feel bad then. All right. Hold on a second.
Hold on. Back
up. I just want to say, and I kind of get the alder man, you know, policeman, police, you know, I kind of get that idea. All right. And that's, you know, it's still, to me, it seems, you know, a little arcane given all the other things that are going on the planet Earth. I don't think it's our biggest problem, but still.
No, not,
but,
not
but
at all.
At least it's something that, you know, to the ear might be something. History, the word history is not based on his. It is not an idea. It is not a gender centric word. It's not. It is not in
it's
any
not based
way.
On his story.
Right.
Its etymology is actually comes from a Greek root, meaning inquiry.
Right.
Historia.
Historia. Right. History. History.
Inquiry.
Historia.
Knowledge, yeah. From inquiry or judge. So it's not.
Because the Greek word for his is not his.
No.
You guys sound like a clip from my big fat Greek wedding.
Exactly. That's how it started off here. Because I said, I bet it's from a Greek root. And he's like, oh, of course you would. I was like, I'm going to look it up.
Do you have any Windex to spray on my pimple?
Right. Because that was the one thing that bugged a lot of Greek Americans, I know. Because no one knew anybody about the Windex thing. But a lot of the rest of it was true.
Yeah.
Like if you're a vegetarian in a Greek, you know, go to a Greek event, they do think that you could still eat lamb.
Right.
Still, that somehow translate. Yayas don't really necessarily understand that piece of things.
Right. You don't eat meat? Anyway, the point we're trying to make here is that I'm sick and tired of dumb things. There's a lot of dumb things. Just a ton of them. And I would like to say that this idea, and I get it, if you're trying to be cute in saying it or trying to, you know, just make a point.
Yeah.
But there are people out there that want to change the word history because it is too
sexist.
Gender specific and
well,
sexist.
That's
and you're
ridiculous.
Like, that's wrong.
Well, that's ridiculous. But on a day like today, it just kind of emphasizes what the day's about. When you have the first black, you know, first African-American female, openly gay mayor, and two of the other top leaders in the city are also women of color.
Right. I totally get it.
It totally goes with the day.
It does. And the reverend who spoke at the inauguration also used it with emphasis, as you played in your news, Ken.
Correct.
So
Ken, if you want to go get a beer. We should go get a beer.
Need some beef jerky.
You guys ever use the word herstory in conversation?
not unless we're really trying to work something.
Watch this.
You know, quite honestly, I think that we should change the word history. It's too sexist. Don't you agree?
Well, and if you break it down more, it could be like her story.
Yeah, right.
And this is her story today, Mary Lightfoot.
That is what it is. All right. Okay.
It goes along with the whole Shiro thing.
Right.
The what?
Yeah, Shiro.
Shiro's another one instead of Hero.
Shiro.
Oh.
Why can't she just be a hero?
Don't ask me. I didn't start it.
Who started it? I want to know. Give me their number.
Look, we can't overuse this stuff.
Let me tell you something right now. We're stopping this conversation right now, and we're ordering dinner, all right? I cannot have this no more. It's driving me crazy.
Too hard
all
to keep
the
track.
Things going on, and somebody wants to make an argument about a his or her story.
Yeah.
So for all you Shiros out there. Oh, my. Okay.
Yeah.
Hey, here's an idea. This is a completely separate note. We mentioned this a little bit earlier on the Top 5-5 because in New York they're trying to do this. They want to make it, and Chicago will not be far behind here.
Mm-hmm.
They would like to make it illegal to text or look at your phone while crossing the street as a pedestrian.
That doesn't seem like the worst idea.
No, but who here isn't guilty of that?
Well, right? Yeah, I mean, exactly.
It makes you think if you're going, just like the jaywalking law in Los Angeles and elsewhere, you kind of makes you think about it, you know, how unsafe it can be.
You know, it's funny because we don't really, I think there's a jaywalking law in the books here. I've never seen it enforced.
No. Out on the mean streets of Mount Prospect growing up, Officer Friendly once got me for jaywalking across the street from the school.
Get out.
Officer Friendly's like, over here, buddy. Yeah, me and a bunch of my friends had to write
Was it just a warning?
Yeah, it was just a warning. We had to like write a whole page report of why it's bad to jaywalk and submit it to the school. I was like,
Wait. The Mount Prospect police could sentence you? You know what? This is where you need some.
Where was Mike Monaco back then? Right. I need somebody to defend me.
You need some pain in the keister, you know, constitutional guy that's going to jump up and go, there is nothing in the Constitution that requires. There is this, but the police officers are just the arresters. It would really take the Cook County State's Attorney to actually bring a case, and a judge would have to roll that. That's what you need. That's right. You needed me at a moment like that.
Yeah. So I had to struggle through a full page report and submit it to the school.
Yeah.
Why it's bad.
The jaywalking is, I know, like in LA, LA is so surface street intensive.
Yeah.
And until fairly recently had not a really good public transportation program. And that's the thing, like downtown in Chicago, jaywalkers, it is survival of the fittest in the loop in Chicago. And the majority of circumstances that are fatal there are a human versus bus.
Oh.
In the loop.
Gosh.
So that's more common than it should be, but that's kind of the way it goes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what you got to do. You know, if you're going to do that, you're going to run out in the middle of traffic in a downtown. You know, this is the sort of thing that's going to happen.
But, you know, the other thing that people, from the driver perspective, if there's a crosswalk, even if there isn't a stop sign, you are required to stop there. And so you see these crossings in the loop also where people have go from business to business or building to building, and there isn't an official stop sign or it's not an end of a street. But you're required to stop there.
Right, because the entrances are in the middle of the street for both buildings across from each other. Yeah, you know,
there's a lot to keep track of.
I know, you drive through the loop, you see signage you've never seen anywhere else. Like, what is this? What is this lane? What is this lane? I don't know.
Yeah, well, that's because they're trying to make... They have the buses, the bikes. They have a bus lane. Yeah. There's a bike lane. There's a brand the broken lane in Shiro case you're lane. In a... there's a Shiro lane, right?
Shiro lane.
Right. Where only women...
Shiro coming through!
When only women wearing capes can actually be in that lane. And they have their own turn signal. It's the damnedest thing. You know what else we have in the city of Chicago that really bears... I think this is in the state they have this. I've seen this in the suburbs as well. But it's the lined crosswalk with the little sign that gives you the, if there's somebody in the crosswalk, the vehicle traffic has to stop.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the problem is when you're approaching, maybe it's me, I don't know, maybe I've got a deficit here, but when you're approaching the lined crosswalk,
right,
I'm never sure, is that the lined crosswalk that tells me to stop and do I stop? And what if someone's standing there and they don't look like they want to move? Do I still have to stop? If they're starting to move, should I stop? What do I do in this? Or if I stop and it's like a one-way, three lanes all going the same direction, and I stop and then the person walks in front of me, but the cab to the right of me, because it always is, or it's in this, that'd be an Uber, just goes flying right by because they don't know the rules because they're from Ohio. What happens there? What am I supposed to do with that? We need more clarity. I need more definition on what that is.
Crossing guards. Back in the day, crossing guards by the schools.
Uh-huh.
More crossing guards. That's what I'm running on for mayor.
We need some of those.
Or folks, I'm here to tell you I'm going to solve Chicago's problem. Bring back crossing guards.
And we
got to create jobs.
We got a lot of homeless people. We can put them to work as crossing guards. They're used to being in the intersection anyway.
Put this neon vest on. It's our pointing people in the right direction.
Oh, man.
But in New York, it seems like this whole walk and text thing, a lot of people, like you see the middle class kind of talking in the media and things like, oh, well, this is just another way, kind of like our red light camera pushback, that it's just another way to tax us.
It probably is.
Get another $50 out of us every so-and-so.
Yeah, but there are people that have, like, fallen down manholes texting.
Yeah, that's true. That's
right, bad. Walked into, the videos on the YouTubes.
Uh-huh.
I love it when you see a guy walk into like a fountain.
Right. Like a courtyard fountain.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. That's my
classic. Or walk into a window.
Mm-hmm. There you
always,
go.
Always entertaining.
Which I think speaks to the peripheral vision more than just texting and walking. Because, I mean, when you're doing it, you could still kind of see your surroundings. If you can't, there's something wrong with you.
Head on a swivel.
Exactly right. Head on a swivel. All right. Thank you, Kevin. Thank you,
Crossing Guards.
Thank you, Lauren. Thank you, Anna.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Kim.
Anytime.
Coming up, the stories that matter from Kim in the WGN Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. What's coming up?
You can now read 600 pages of testimony from President Trump's former lawyer, Michael Cohen.
Dog ass. All right. The traffic being brought to you by the Illinois Department of Transportation.
Tuesday, new uniforms, same rivalry. It's Bryant versus Bryce in Philly. Cubs Phils. Tuesday night at 6 on WGN-TV.
At Wrigley.
At Wrigley.
Thank you, Kev. By the way, you missed it by 24 hours because, Kevin, tomorrow is Crossing Guard Appreciation Day. I know that because I'm a deputy crossing guard.
I cannot picture you being a crossing guard. I just can't.
What are you doing?
Move it!
What are you doing?
So go up and hug a crossing guard. You can do that.
But no, I wouldn't do that. Because if you hug a crossing guard and they can't get their arms up to stop the traffic, that could be very dangerous.
I was a crossing guard in elementary school.
So, oh, God.
Did you have a badge?
No, it was like the thing that, came across, kind of looked like a pageant thing.
Yes.
But it was like bright orange.
The bright orange.
And mine was always tangled up, so I just kind of looped it over my head, and it was like a big bundle.
Should you call me a nerd?
I had to do it. It was part of everybody had to have a role around the school. Some kids sold like the cookies at lunch. Some kids were the crossing guard.
So was it your fine safety record that made them zero in on you?
By the way, this sounds more like a reform school. All right, who's going to be mopping up? We're going to get a guy to do that.
Cleaning toilets?
All right. You're going to be the crossing guard. You're the trustee. I could tell that he always was. All right. Hold on. Let me just tell you what's coming up. Kim Gordon's got the WGN news. And then Chicago White Sox baseball's on the air. We'll see you back here tomorrow at 3.